Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for Wednesday, July 24th. I am your host, Adam Burke. I'm going to be joined today by Ken Barkley, better known as Lockie Lockerson, the author of Lockie Lockerson's 2019 college football season preview. Now, you are going to get a little bit of a sneak peek at his season preview here because it doesn't actually come out until Thursday, but we're going to talk about why he wrote it, what's in the book, what's going to be really applicable for bettors this season. And we'll throw out some stuff on the futures market, a couple of season win totals, a lot of different things going on here in this guide. I got an advanced copy via PDF. I love it. I think it's a great read. I think you're going to think the same thing once you actually see it here on Thursday. But Lockie's going to join me today, tell you all about what's going on here with this guide. We got a lot of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com right now. Of course, daily MLB stuff with my MLB picks and tips piece. A couple things a day from Alan Moody. Trends from Admir Algic. We're starting to roll out more of our college football stuff. My power ratings went up last week. This week, I added the spreadsheet that has all of my projected spreads for the season and season win totals. James Mazzola with a phenomenal guide, or a phenomenal preview, I should say, for the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. That's this week's golf tournament. I've got NASCAR stuff up over there already as well. We've gotten a couple of college football podcasts the last 2 weeks, one with Brad Powers last week, one with Rolf Michaels yesterday. The Bettors Box tomorrow. We got tons of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com and right here on Bang the Book Radio. Make sure you check it all out. And of course, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. And we got lots of games to be betting here over the next several months. As I bring on Ken Barkley, better known as Lockie Lockerson, at Lockie Lockerson on Twitter. Ken, how's it going today, man?
I'm good, Adam. I was trying to think about when the last time I did your podcast was, and, you know, I'll just say I can't really think of the date. I think it's been too long. Hope you're doing well and really happy to be back.
Hope you're doing well as well, buddy. And before we get into the guide, and obviously you've spent a good majority of your summer working on this, how's the summer been for you otherwise?
It's been pretty good. So I know I've been kind of quiet on social media just because I've just been putting a lot of work into the guide and trying to use the Twitter account to just promote the guide pretty shamelessly. And sorry for everyone that has to deal with me, you know, hyping it every day, but I just, you know, I put a good like 6 to 8 weeks in on it. I think it's really good. But aside from that, been kind of playing around with some baseball props and trying to build some things that have been going pretty well so far. Just the summer is always such a great time for experimentation. You know, you look back at your other sports, what worked, what didn't work, what do you really need to go back over and hammer out? There's so many slow days, only baseball on a lot of the time, that this is a great time to go through stuff like that. So I've been doing a lot of that stuff and taking some vacation with the wife and kids, which has been really fun too.
I do want to ask you about this. You know, I believe it was, I want to say maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago, something like that. You know, you left your day job and you decided that this was what you wanted to do full time for a living, between betting and doing obviously all the media stuff that you do, you know, being with the Action Network, and then, you know, doing a lot of stuff on your own here as well. How has that transition been? Has it been kind of what you expected? Has it been, you know, a lot more work than you thought? I know you've been putting together personal models and stuff like that. Walk us kind of through that, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that would love to make betting their full-time job. What do you think about it?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it's not for everybody. I can't even say for sure that it's for me yet, even though I've had some really kind of great successes in some areas. I think there are some aspects of the move that have been really predictable. So, you know, like the idea of you go from salary to freelance work for, you know, content companies like you guys or some others. You know, I think there are some things about that process that were totally predictable. And, you know, you really have to plan this stuff out ahead of time. You know, like I have a wife and family. My wife works also, you know, so like in tandem, this wasn't just like one day I woke up and decided I'm leaving and I'm pursuing my dream. And I think the thing that people really need to understand is, like, I think humility would be one of the great qualities you can have if you choose to make a decision like that. And what I would say is, you know, I definitely wouldn't go into it day one thinking I have these huge edges, I'm going to dominate, you know, whatever. I mean, if you've been putting in the time and it really kind of has been your full-time job and you are doing well, then that's great and transition that way. But I think there are a lot of people who are like, well, if I just had more time, I would crush it. You know, I would make so much money if this was just my only thing. And my sort of response to that is like, probably no, you wouldn't. And there's a lot of reasons why. There's a lot of skills that you need. So I've tried to approach this whole, it's been about a year and 4 months, I think, with the idea that there's a lot of skills that I need to, you know, that I've needed to learn and get better at and evolve, whether it's, you know, just the idea of being able to scrape incredible sums of data and, you know, whether it's learning to code or using Excel or formulas and, you know, a way better understanding of statistics, all that kind of stuff. And I've tried to approach it like, you know, I didn't have the skill set that I needed, but I needed the time to build it and just see if I could do it as well as I thought I could. And so far it's been going really well. But I mean, as you know, as somebody who's bet for a long time and, you know, you try to make smart decisions all the time, you're always learning and you're always figuring out what skills you need to get better at. And as long as you're willing to put in that time and learn and not just bet, but actually, you know, whether it's like take courses, talk to other smart people, really refine your process. If you're willing to do that, then maybe this is something that can work out for you.
So as we look here at the college football season preview that you've written, very creative title, by the way, Lockie Lockerson's 2019 college football season preview.
To the point, that's me, you know.
I like that. And, you know, I mean, we do the same thing with the Bang the Book MLB betting guide that I do every year with, you know, long season win total write-ups on all 30 teams, the futures market for divisions, you know, even stuff like MVP, home run king, all that kind of thing. Believe me, I understand the work that goes into this process. I commend you for this. I've read it. It's phenomenal. Again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you sent me an advanced copy via PDF, and I greatly appreciate that. So it's got my sign of approval for anybody out there sort of wondering if they should get this or not. You can still pre-order it. Go to @LockieLockerson on Twitter, and there's an easy link there to pre-order it. It does come out here on Thursday. But I have to ask, man, you know, I do the MLB betting guide because I started doing it several years ago. I feel like I kind of owe it to the readers now. And it also helps me organize my thoughts for the upcoming season. Why did you take on such a big project like this?
So I think the, you know, we were just talking about in the whatever year and 3 months since I really moved over to gambling content and handicapping full time. You know, what have I learned, all that kind of stuff. And the transition from being a consumer to a producer is still really recent for me. I mean, even last summer with some college football stuff, but especially 2 summers ago, 3 summers ago, et cetera, you know, I was just like everybody else. I liked watching sports and I would occasionally place a bet and I was trying to get smarter. And so I was, you know, consuming as much material as possible. And I bought all the guides that everyone buys and I read all the guides that everyone reads and says are really good. And, you know, I read as much preview material as I could. And just what I found, the more I learned about, you know, actually, you know, whether it's building a model or statistics or any of that kind of stuff is, you know, like not to be too blunt, but sort of the uselessness of a lot of the information that is present everywhere. So, you know, if you love college football and you're not a bettor, if you're just a fan, all of this information is incredibly interesting. You have narratives about players and teams and, you know, this team has a new position coach and this quote from this guy is really interesting. And there's just stories and blogs and stories on all these sites and in these guides. And there's just so much information that if you're a fan, it's just, you know, an all out binge. You just consume all of it. It's awesome. It's really fun. College football is such a fun sport. When you try to transition to making bets, that's where it becomes really interesting in terms of, all right, all of this information that's available, all of these blogs I read, all of these numbers that I've consumed about this team, opinions from other people who write guides. Okay, how do I take all that and make it into either a number that I can bet off of or simulate to get a price? Or, you know, how do I even just make sense of it on a very basic level to figure out this is a good bet, this is not a good bet? So I think, you know, the main reason I wrote the guide was just I didn't see that anywhere. I saw a lot of predictions and I didn't see very much after the fact about how the predictions did, by the way, but I saw a lot of predictions and numbers that might mean something but might not, and a lot of cases being made. You know, people are really good salesmen and can sell, you know, you can sell both sides of a bet really easily. Saw a lot of that. But I didn't see a lot of, you know, taking really like basic fundamental information and trying to create, you know, a number out of it that you can bet off of.
Well, and I think that's something that's really important about this guide, and you and I have talked about this a little bit via DM, and it is something I definitely want to make sure I brought up here on the podcast. It's written with betting in mind. And we have a lot of people now getting into this space as legalization sweeps across the country, as, you know, betting has become something that you don't have to sweep under the rug anymore. You have a lot of people for a lot of the major media outlets or the major guides writing about picks, writing about what they think is value when they don't really know the industry. And you do. And I think that this fills a big void in the space of a guide that is written not exclusively, but for the most part, with the handicapper and better in mind. And you don't have to placate anybody. You don't have to keep your access to the coaches like Phil Steele does, like Athlon or Lindy's or some of the other guides that are out there, or some of the ones that are in other sports. You don't have to keep that line of communication open with the coaches. You don't have to worry about pissing anybody off. You know, so something, and again, I mean, obviously I don't want to, throw cold water on any of the other guides that are out there or anything like that. But, I've kind of joked about this with a lot of people. If you read Phil Steele's magazine and you read the different personnel groups and the position groups, every group in the country is going to get better. Every one of them is going to improve. And we know that that's not going to be the case, but he says things like that to keep his access to the coaches. I think you've got, a lot more impartiality to your guide, and therefore it has a lot more relevance to the betting crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I totally, again, like, I, the funny thing is, like, I like Phil Steele's guide, but I think everything has a place, right? So when I get Phil Steele's guide, what I am not using it for is making bets. So I think that's the thing that right off the bat is probably different from how a lot of people use it. Like, okay, well, I'm going to, in the book, I kind of like refer to this all as like, you're trying to solve a puzzle, basically. Like, you're trying to figure out the complete landscape of the sport, A to Z, and with projections, or I mean, at least some kind of, even in your head, some kind of loose projection about who's going to be good and who is not. And, Phil's guide is extreme. I don't want to sort of focus on him specifically, but I will say, like, his guy is very good at giving you a lot of information. You know, like, there are a lot of resource materials that exist that have a ton of information. Mine has 1% of the information that Phil Steele has. But the point is, when you finished reading a guide, any guide, are you better equipped to make a bet on a team, yes or no? And what I've tried to design this guide to be is for the answer to absolutely be yes. So, I mean, just to wrap up one of the things that you said too, like, we're talking about, college athletes, which means we're talking about kids who are, or, young men who are 18, 19 years old, 20 years old. So there's absolutely, I mean, and this is it's almost a good thing. There's a reason why a lot of the media coverage is slants really positive, right? We're not going to rip kids. We're not going to say like all these guys suck and say horrible things. I mean, there are message boards and Twitter where that happens, but overall in the media and in the preview guys, I think there's a tone of like, here are the people who can achieve great things. Like, let's celebrate those really good stories. And the problem is like the betting market cares not whatsoever about how old anyone is or how we should be treating people. It's just, this is the number, yes or no. So, a lot of things you're going to hear from a lot of different people right now are only the good stories. Only, I think this team is a dark horse. I think this team can make the playoff. I think this guy's awesome. And all those stories are awesome if you're a fan of college football. But if you bet, there's a flip side to the coin. Every time somebody gets better, basically as a zero-sum game, somebody has to get worse. In college football, there's enough cupcake opponents that's not necessarily true, but teams have to play worse, and if you don't want to think about it, like 18-year-olds, if that helps, then great. But, you have to really take an honest assessment of where a program is, and creating a number, if you're going to bet into a win total, and it can't just be driven by like, everybody's going to be really good. Every unit's going to be better, stuff like that.
So we'll whittle it down to a team by team basis here in a little bit, but I sort of want to look first at an overview of the college football season, because you spend a lot of time on this in terms of looking at teams that can make the playoff, teams that can win the title, and then also the Heisman. And, you do mention that on Twitter, that those are some of the very important things that are in this guide here. So let's talk first and foremost about the college football playoff, about who can actually make it, who can actually win the title, because again, as you mentioned, a lot of positivity in those preseason guides. For the most part, we know that two playoff spots are already taken by Alabama and Clemson. I mean, it would be a stunner if either one of those teams aren't in the Final Four. So there are two spots left for X number of teams here. And one of the things that you looked at in deep detail, and you've done this before on the college basketball side for us when you were writing at bangthebook.com, is that it's a select group of teams that have a chance. So what is your methodology? What is your criteria for looking at that?
Sure. So, I definitely take a fair amount of time in the book to talk about this. And I think overall, one of the things that the guide can do, I don't know if it can help you make a lot of really good bets, but I think one of its best attributes is it can prevent you from making really bad bets. So, in a lot of cases, maybe a pass is better than a bet. And I try to emphasize a lot of situations where that's true. Some markets where, there's just no value whatsoever. And, if you think about it logically, if a market has been open for a very long time and the limits are reasonable, you should basically always presume or proceed with a default understanding that, the market's probably really good. If it's been open for a while and the limits are reasonable, like everyone else has also looked at the market and either registered an opinion or passed. And if the numbers are stale or not moving or the same as they have been for a really long time, single game markets, this is true over the course of a day. When you get to 6:59 at night, on like Eastern time before baseball starts, the numbers are probably pretty good unless there's been some kind of weird last second informational edge, Mike Trout tripped walking to the batter's box and, he's out or whatever. Just assume that the markets are pretty good. So to pivot back to college football, one thing that we know about the closing futures markets and closing win total numbers, again, once the markets have been open for a while and the limits have gone up, and we get really close to the start of the season, we know that they're really, really efficient and they should be viewed as such. So, just looking back through, the profile of the champion, the profile of playoff teams, going back through the BCS era, what types of teams win the title and what types of teams make the playoff. And in college football, I think more than a lot of other sports, especially the NFL, it's a very, very restrictive list and the markets really do get it right and should be respected. The first choices in the market this year are Alabama and Clemson by a lot, and then Georgia, and then a reasonable gap to a few other teams, Michigan, Ohio State, Oklahoma, depending on where you go. And that's correct. This isn't a situation where you're going to look and be like, the book's so stupid. This team's 100-1 and they're like going to be such a surprise this year. Like that doesn't happen. I think I looked at in the book, I think it was the last 15 years. I basically tried to go back through almost the entire BCS era even to figure out, what types of teams really have seasons that end up with them winning a title, what type of talent profile is required, what type of schedule is required, conference they play in. And a bunch of things I look at are the markets, where are they in the market at the start of the year? Were we able to figure out whether they were good or not? And in every single case going through the last 15 years, the winner of the title was a team that we totally saw coming. There were no surprises, and college football is not really a sport that lends itself to surprises at the top. There are plenty of surprises in the middle. We got upsets and conference play and every Saturday's crazy and all this stuff at the top in terms of who wins. Like it's not a surprise. Like you're going to know the team that wins and you see futures priced that way. So I think when you use the markets, assuming that they're awesome, assuming that they're super efficient at the end, I think it can do a lot of the work for you in terms of what teams you should really be looking at, what the smart sort of, choice is if you just had to pick who to win the title. And this year, just to wrap this up, I think, if you look at some of the parameters that have been set previously, like who kind of makes sense to win the title and who doesn't, I really think you get four teams. I only like three of them necessarily. I don't really like Clemson a lot this year. I think they can make the playoff an insanely high percentage of the time, but that's not necessarily driven by how good they are. That's more driven by a lot of other factors, most notably like the conference they play in and the schedule that they're going to play and where they play the games and stuff like that. So, I think Clemson is an absurd price to make the playoff. That's probably true. I don't necessarily think when they get there and they have to play two elite teams that they can win. The other three teams, again, which are not surprising, are Alabama, Georgia, and Michigan. If you look back at the last 15 years of history, those three teams in Clemson, those four teams would fit perfectly in line with the profile we have for what a champion looks like. And not just that, but every other team would really sort of be a huge outlier in one way or another, whether it's how they played the year before, the type of offense or defensive unit they had the year before, metrics that they have coming into this season, whether it's recruiting or returning production or other stuff. It's a very, very short list, and it shouldn't be surprising who's going to win based on all the history that we have.
No, and I think that one of the most interesting stats that you mentioned here in this piece about, looking at the national championship futures, looking at the profiles and the teams that, could actually make the playoff, the winner of the national championship in the last 15 years averaged 10.33 regular season wins the year before winning the title. So like you said, they're good. We know they're good. Typically, they're a program with a lot of stability, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show here as we look on more of a team-by-team basis. But you obviously, again, it does make a lot of sense that you have to be very good the year before to be very good the year that you win the title. So that was definitely a pretty interesting statistic there. And one thing I do want to circle back to that you mentioned, you know, you said something to the effect of letting the markets do the work for you in terms of, you know, seeing who's actually going to be good, seeing what the perception is of a lot of these teams. And I think that's very important for the listeners of my show, any other media that you do here in promotion of this guide, or you know, anything that you may mention in future guides. Even if you're not liquid enough with your bankroll, even if you're not capitalized enough to play this off-season market of win totals, of futures, all that type of stuff, pay attention to the lines that are out there. Pay attention to the line movement that you see, because in a market like this that is pretty efficient, because it's generally the sharper guys that are getting involved with this preseason stuff, they're going to tell you who should be good, who, you know, there's a higher perception of, who there's a lower perception of, and all that stuff can help you once these games actually start. Even if you can't bet on them, there's a lot of information to glean from them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, I'm sure, I don't know how many pro sports bettors listen to your podcast. I mean, hopefully a lot of everyone listens to your podcast, but I'm sure there are pros that are going to listen to some of this stuff and think it's incredibly entry-level type information. And to a certain extent, they're right. And the book is not really designed with them in mind. It's more designed for the sort of burgeoning group of the casual bettor who wants to get into betting, has been in betting for a little while, but is a big college football fan, and that sort of hybrid person, of which I was one, which is why I thought I was a good person to write the guide. And, you know, one of the things that people, one of those entry level barriers is the understanding that, like, yeah, the markets aren't, you know, just some pinata that you get to hit for money all the time because they're so improperly formed. You know, like the respect you need to have for the closing number, even in futures and win totals, is high. You know, like, it's not, you're just, think about your level of competition. Think about all the people who are looking at the same bet and choosing whether to bet it or not. Think about the wisdom of crowds, you know, like, just the idea that you can just look at a sheet toward the end of the season and just be like, ah, that number's like 8 wins off that. What are they doing setting this price? Like, in a lot of those situations, the fault is with you and not with the book. And even if you're just a casual fan, maybe you place an occasional bet, you just like to follow the sport, your awareness of the sport and who you should really look at to win the title, just as a fan, what games you should watch on Saturday, when you talk to your friends, how you should think about the sport, the markets can shape a lot of that for you and do the work. Like, this is everyone who is available registering an opinion about what a price should be. So, you know, in a lot of ways, like, just use the markets to make yourself smarter, even if you're not placing a bet.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned in the intro when we were sort of talking about why you decided to write the guide, as you said, there's a lot of information out there in a lot of these different guides and a lot of previews over at, you know, various major media sites and all that type of stuff. What's important to do as a bettor and as a handicapper is to figure out what really matters, what it is that does allow teams to have success, sort of cutting through all the noise that's out there. And one of the things that you focus on specifically, a metric that you came up with called talent score, tell our listeners about what that is and what the application is in your mind.
Sure. So I think even for people that are not analytics driven or people who do not like math whatsoever, I tried to create something that was really, really, really easy to understand so we could all kind of sort of look at it together, figure out what it was telling us, and then apply it to the season. So I'm probably aimed too low in terms of what I'm creating, and there are probably analytics people who are going to read this and tear their hair out because it's so straightforward. But basically, you know, I look at the entry level concepts in college football. Like, all right, so when it comes to players, what do you have to do? Okay, well, you need to bring in really good players. You need to develop those players into better players who can play college football really well. And you need to retain as many of them for as long as possible. So, like, all right, those are your three goals with regard to players. All right, so what are the statistics that can identify those things occurring really well? So I think, you know, the first thing people would probably think of is coaching, but I'm not actually really sure you can apply a numerical value to a coach necessarily. I think coaching is incredibly important, but I think other than looking at, like, program averages and stuff like that, like, you're really kind of, you're getting in the weeds in a weird way with trying to sort of numerically put a number on coaching. So I think the two numbers that you have the best chance with to figure out those three initial things are four-year recruiting average. So that's bringing in all the really good players over and over and over again. And then returning production, which is a stat that I first found out about from Bill Connolly, who works at ESPN now. And, you know, his returning production is sort of driven with, like, what makes his rating better year over year, whereas you can also apply it to what makes a team win more year over year, or what makes their Pythagorean go up year, you know, whatever. There's, you can be solving for a different thing, but the concept of the stat is incredible. It's, like, one of the best things I've read with regard to the sport, and one of the reasons why returning production as just one number that explains everything coming back is so valuable is it takes all the onus off of you to have to read all of the information and consume it and analyze it to try to figure out, like, well, all right, like, the quarterback's back, but the, I mean, how many times have you gone through, like, a preview where it's like, all right, so two of three defensive tackles and four of six linebackers and the kicker, and he was all conference. And I mean, it's just like, you can spend an hour doing that for one team, and I'm not actually sure you're anywhere better than when you started, depending on what you come up with. So having a returning production metric is just so valuable because it removes your ability to be biased. It removes your ability to say, you know, maybe you're somebody who's partial to NFL caliber skill position players, and if you see any team that has those, you're going to love that team's over. Okay, well, that there might not actually be a lot of support for that data-wise that matters whatsoever. I mean, how many times does LSU have like six NFL wide receivers and they don't use them or something like that? Or, you know, like Michigan, same thing, highly recruited wide receivers that they don't use very well. So returning production takes all of that and it just kind of sweeps the deck and it says, like, all right, all you need is this number. Now you don't have to worry about any of the other stuff. So I think if you just look at those two numbers, four-year recruiting average and returning production, and you basically put them into a formula that's pretty straightforward, you can end up getting a rating for a team, which I just call talent score, because it's all it is it's an evaluation of how talented the players are at that particular school. It basically, it doesn't necessarily have to do with how many wins they're going to have, how well they're going to do that particular year. It sort of describes just like the average player that's there for the season. And then there's all sorts of things that affect how you take those players and use them. But, you know, I think the creation of a metric where everybody can kind of see, like, oh yeah, like these two numbers are really important. And when you put them in this formula and you get a rating, it does do a good job of predicting who's going to make the playoff, what teams you need to be paying attention to, you know, what schools maybe are up and coming that you should look at in the future because they have these hotbeds of talent, et cetera, et cetera. I think so, you know, the creation of a metric, I think, was something I really wanted to do just so everybody could get an idea for, like, you know, you want to do your own work and you want to solve the puzzle yourself, like, you know, be thinking about, like, how can I just create some simple stuff to help me do that? So I tried to help people come up with a metric that kind of gets their brains working a little bit.
Well, and in the guide here, you list the top 30 in talent score, and there are some usual suspects up there that a lot of people would expect, but there are some teams that maybe you wouldn't think about that are top 10, top 15, top 20. So you check those out in Locke's guide when you get it. Again, talent score, that metric, the top 30 listed. And there were some teams in there that definitely kind of made me raise my eyebrows a little bit. Some teams that maybe I'll start to think about a little bit differently here as we head on into the college football season. But I want to transition, speaking of talent, over to the Heisman Trophy. You know, I mean, there's a lot of interesting candidates for the Heisman year in and year out. Some guys that are very much on the radar, other guys that emerge on the radar as the season goes along. So with regards to the Heisman here, Ken, you talk a lot about this in the book. I know you've talked a lot about it in different articles that you've written. What are you sort of looking at there in terms of looking for good values from a future standpoint?
Sure. So one thing that I think differentiates the Heisman from betting a team to win the conference or betting a team to win the title is I don't think the Heisman can necessarily be modeled or put into a formula using past results or a data set. I'm sure someone much smarter than me might argue the opposite, but I think especially if you're a casual bettor, like the idea that you can look at the landscape of teams and then apply a percentage chance, like, okay, well, I have Tua at 38% and I have Trevor Lawrence at 31%, you know, like to get that granular and fine with your projection, I think is either impossible or really unlikely for a lot of us. So it is kind of the Wild West in terms of trying to figure out, okay, what should a guy's price actually be? Like, should Tua really be plus 275? Should Trevor Lawrence really be plus 300? Should he be plus 200? Should he be even? Like, what are we doing here? And, you know, I think whenever you're trying to create a list of players that you should be interested in, I think you obviously have to look at the history of the award. And, you know, this is sort of like a something I've seen now in a few different places. People are kind of starting to push the same idea of like this profile of a player. And I think, you know, the criteria are incredibly straightforward and they're kind of obvious, but what they can do, just like what we were talking about before, is they can make you avoid bad bets. You might not be able to make great bets, but you can at least, you know, put yourself in the mix with a chance to win as opposed to just lighting money on fire. And it is really easy to light your money on fire betting the Heisman. There's 100 players offered at a couple offshores, you know, all the prices look kind of wacky. There's some long shots. You can bet guys like 500 to one in some places. So it's appealing for some people because the price is just so huge, but there are just so many bad bets to make. So, all right, like what are the criteria really quickly? So you want a team that you think is going to end the season with about 10 regular season wins or more, maybe 9, but your goal should be like, you want to try to find a team that's going to win 10 games or more. Every year, there are not many, very many of those teams that play for power conferences, and you only want to be paying attention to the power conferences. I've seen a lot of people make a Derek King push. Like, I mean, the guy had 50 touchdowns last year, so he definitely has a statistical profile that's crazy. But, you know, the history of the award basically tells us that there's almost no situation that could arise where a group of five player could win the award. They can get invited to the ceremony, and we saw that with Kellen Moore. We saw that with Colt Brennan, you know, guys who also had incredibly insane statistical seasons. Their teams won a lot of games. So, you know, we want to look at power conference players that are going to win 10 games or more. We really only want to look at quarterbacks and running backs. A lot of people think it's just quarterbacks now because of the way the game is played and, you know, you have dual threat guys and accumulate stats. I still think running backs can win. I just think the situation has to be correct. And, you know, that's really like basically it. It's just sort of, it becomes a question of, okay, like how do you identify which teams are going to win 10 games? And then the last criteria is like, okay, when they do that, can they accumulate 6 stats? So, you know, like, Kyler Murray and Tua really last year, you know, just insane, like profiles that other quarterbacks just can't get because of the offenses that they run. So, you know, if you just use those criteria, I think you can get some good bets and you can identify some prices, but you can also, you know, really eliminate a lot of the bad bets that you could make. And, you know, a lot of times saving money is as good as winning money.
All right, so you do mention 4 guys specifically here that are pretty reasonable prices. You do mention one guy that is a little bit of a long shot price in the guide. Not going to have you give away all 4 of those here on the show. Obviously, want to leave some things behind the curtain for those that do buy the season preview available over on Amazon and does come out here on Thursday, so the day after we're doing the show. Throw one of these names out there for us, man. Who do you think does have some pretty decent value in the Heisman market?
Sure. So I'll talk about my favorite because I don't think it gives anything away. And also, it actually might be advantageous to people to hear now before, you know, the price just gets completely out of whack. I think DeAndre Swift is like the best bet to win the Heisman this year, just from a price standpoint. I think it is really, really difficult to find non-Tua and Trevor candidates this year that are appealing. A lot of people want to try to sell Jalen Hurts or Jake Fromm or King, as we talked about, or somebody else. I really think Tua or Trevor is going to win the award just a ton of the time this year. So most years, the favorites are actually not people I'm interested in whatsoever. The prices are more even, spread out. Maybe the favorites like 9 or 10 to 1 and up, and you're sort of just hand-picking out maybe some guys in the top 20 price-wise. This year, it's just a completely different market because it's actually correct. It's so rarely correct at this point in the season. It's totally correct now. You have 2 quarterbacks who play for huge schools, who are high profile players, have crazy stat profiles. Their teams are going to win 10. Like, they fit all the criteria and they're going to be even better than they were last year. So in some ways it just kind of kills the market in some ways. But if you're trying to find that guy who can be around those other two in the middle of the season, maybe just for even a hedge situation, maybe like they can put up the stats enough to win. There's a DeAndre Swift 45 to 1 that exists right now at a prominent offshore that I just can't believe is still there. And I'm not allowed to bet anymore on it. So I can just tell you that it exists. There's a Swift 45 to 1. If you just look around, you'll find it. It's not even close to correct. His true price should probably be somewhere in the 10 to 20 to 1 range, which is where he is in most places. I think there's some 15s, there's some 20s. The case for DeAndre Swift is pretty straightforward. So we already talked about Alabama's best player and Clemson's best player. Well, Georgia's the 3rd most likely team to probably win 10 games or more this year. So, you know, you should for sure be checking out their roster and looking at their quarterback and running back. They dismissed their leading receiver, I think about a month ago now, which was a little controversial. As a result of dismissing him, their five leading receivers from last year, all five are gone, which I think makes Jake Fromm, sort of his value drop a little bit. Like, how many stats can he really accumulate throwing to an entirely new position group? They have a new offensive coordinator, and all of the sort of quotes and philosophy and analysis in the media covering the school is that, you know, his profile is, I want to get the running backs really involved in the passing game. And I mean, you're going to have to do that this year because there are so few receivers. Get the running backs more involved in the passing game. Swift was really banged up at the start of last year. After the fact, it came out that he had just a ton of injuries, where Kirby Smart basically wasn't even really using him. The first few weeks, he would get, you know, 8 carries, 9 carries. He was splitting carries with a couple other guys, one of whom is not there anymore. So just all of this confluence of information, we have a team incredibly likely to hit the win benchmark. He's going to be able to accumulate a lot of stats. His quarterback is less likely to be able to accumulate stats. He'll have plenty of high profile games. I think everything just kind of like blends together in a way where he's very valuable. And most importantly, he's not being rated as valuable as I think he should be. You know, there are other, Justin Fields has a better price than him or lower price. Jalen Hurts has a lower price. There are a couple other guys that are kind of like around him. Like, I think he kind of deserves to be that third guy and probably isn't being rated like the third guy right now.
Well, and of course, another thing that you mentioned there, you know, with Jake Fromm's value possibly dropping a little bit, and you do mention this in the guide as well as one of your criteria, you know, you don't want a guy that's going to have to split votes or split the spotlight with somebody from a production standpoint. So Fromm, you know, a guy who doesn't put up huge numbers anyway, he's a solid quarterback. He's not going to go out there and put up 4,000 yards or anything like that. You know, a guy that probably won't take too much of that production spotlight from somebody like Swift. So definitely a good angle to look at there. And again, I like how you, you know, narrow down the field in terms of, hey, you know what? It's, you got to win games. You know, you have to win a lot of games to be in the Heisman discussion, and you got to put up a lot of numbers while doing it. And those teams that have the chance at winning a lot of games, you know, their running backs may be salting the game away. So a good chance for Swift to pick up some value there as well. All right, let's transition to looking specifically here on a team-by-team level in terms of calculating regular season wins, how you want to evaluate these teams. We already mentioned talent score being a metric that's very important to you when looking at a lot of these different teams. So what else goes into the equation for you as you're looking for season win totals to bet or just trying to rate these teams in general?
Sure. So I think what I tried to do was I tried to sort of split statistics into two categories in terms of their predictive value. And in the book, I have for every power conference team, because all power conference teams, I sort of figured out that power conference teams all tend to kind of behave the same way. The things that affect them affect all of them kind of equally, actually, to some extent. And then there are other factors, which I sort of put in the second column, which like year to year and team to team make a big difference. So I think, you know, you do need to look at every team individually. That's a really big point I make in the book. You can't make a sweeping statement about all 130 teams, but on a broad level, there are things that affect power conference teams a lot, which I would say recruiting would be, you know, one of the primary things that affects them because of the difference in talent from team one to team 65. And then for the other 65 teams, you know, the independents that aren't Notre Dame and the smaller conferences, you know, MAC, Mountain West, Conference USA, et cetera, you really have to go at a conference level data wise because the non-conference schedules the teams are playing differ just so wildly. There are some teams that are, you know, they're getting paid to go lose three times. And there are some teams that have scheduled, you know, some coin flip games all 4 weeks. There are some teams that have a different profile than that. So, you know, meanwhile, in the SEC, I think in the SEC, you're giving, with the exception of South Carolina, I think you can give basically between like 3.3 and 3.6 non-conference wins to all the other 13 teams. So, you know, if you're trying to figure out like, well, why do they all behave the same way? Like, well, that's part of the reason is the scheduling of the non-conference is almost identical across the board for 80% of the teams that play in those conferences. So, you know, in terms of the approach, it needs to be different for power conference team, small conference team, separating the conference from the non-conference. Like, what are the, you know, what are the stats that end up resonating? And I'll be honest, in a lot of the conferences, it's different. You know, in a conference like the MAC, I'll use that as an example, the teams tend to be sort of very equally talented across the board in a lot of ways. You know, the recruiting isn't crazy unless you're like Toledo, basically, and only that sometimes. You know, so the recruiting differences aren't very crazy. Okay, returning production doesn't seem to like matter as much. In a lot of cases, we think of Mac as super dramatic, you know, close, sometimes high scoring games, wild games. And, you know, that's why something like turnover margin in conference games ends up being super, super predictive for the next year. Because if you have 12 teams that are all really equal, and when they play each other, sometimes the team fumbles and sometimes they don't, then a lot of times, you know, the teams that had particularly bad luck in that area will get better. And the teams that were, you know, plus 15 are going to get a little worse. So really a careful approach for each conference is required and each team. And I think, you know, like I already talked about, some of the previous year statistics can indicate whether a team is going to go up or down, but really you just want to look at like a lot of the broad talent statistics and a lot of the sort of program historic averages for teams. You know, if a coach has been there for a while and he generally puts up X wins, or in the last 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, he puts up X wins, he generally recruits at this level, et cetera, like, you know, you can start to make some projections based off that, that end up doing pretty well in the market. And you can kind of identify some situations where, wait a minute, the team always wins this many games, their Pythagorean is always this, but this year it's way low. Why is that? And especially if it's like a, you know, what I would call a bad reason, like, you know, if the team just had happened to struggle last year for a variety of really easily explainable ways, or there's some kind of like informational story about the, you know, the administration doesn't like the coach, or, you know, everybody's down on this team or this program and they're stupid, whatever, something that's not rooted in logic, then, you know, like a lot of times just by looking at the program averages and stuff, you can really create some value and win total bets.
Now, the preferred method generally for a lot of people when coming up with their own win total numbers is exactly what I did over at bangthebook.com in my spreadsheet, looking at the schedule, setting, you know, projecting spreads for those games, then looking at the expected number of wins. That's not the way that you went about doing it, though. You kind of talked in a different way about how to analyze the schedule. So what's sort of your mindset when it comes to that?
Sure. So I would say this would be the number one thing that everyone in gambling space is going to get mad at me about. I think that's like, I was trying to think about this the other day. I was like, what did I do that people are going to hate? And I would say trying to solve win totals without game by game schedule analysis and like, you know, creating, you know, all right, they're an 89% win probability. That's 0.89 wins. Or even doing like a Monte Carlo sim with like all of my projections for whatever points for and allowed, stuff like that. I didn't do it that way. And one of the reasons I didn't do it that way is I went back and I kind of looked at projected spreads before the year and once we got into the season, and changes, whether it's from game of the year markets to when we got to week 6, 7, 8, 9, and we'd had like a lot of, you know, data about those teams, how much those changed and how wildly they changed. And it was so common for us to get so many things wrong before the year about what we thought a game was going to be, even a month into the season. We were so wrong. And, you know, the idea of trying to be able to take, to put such a fine win probability on a game 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I mean, not to mention 10, 11 weeks into the future, just seemed like kind of a bad idea because of just how many things are going to happen before we get there. You know, like the idea that it's like, well, in week 11, Texas plays blank and I make them -6.5. So I give them, you know, that win probability. Like, I just think it's so hard to get every team right and create a number that makes any sense. And if you can do that and you can do it effectively, then, you know, great. I'm not saying don't do that if you have a method that works. But I think for a lot of people who are kind of just on the peripheral, casually interested, the idea that they can create a power rating and win probabilities that end up beating the market is incredibly unlikely. And it also requires a lot of effort too, by the way. And so I think, you know, like my approach was basically, okay, I'm going to just basically just do some simple regression and some other sort of statistical analysis and just try to solve for regular season wins and try to solve for win difference year over year and put in just a ton of data and try to get as close and as predictive as I can. So, you know, the thing about my formula is it's not like if I got one win probability wrong week 10, that really upsets the apple cart one way or another. It more looks at the team in a vacuum and puts their schedule difficulty in and says, okay, like based on these numbers, this team is going to win this many games. And so I think, you know, one thing I go over in the book is just, you know, I think win total projections and, you know, you do power ratings. I think all that stuff is really valuable, but it can't be everything. And one of the important things I think to realize is what is not in there. And in my projections, I had do a really bad job of evaluating quarterbacks. So quarterbacks are way too important to not look at, and they're not really reflected in a great way in my model. So I know that. So that's why, you know, if my model's spitting out a number, I have the ability to think and understand that, okay, you know, whether it was last year and Trevor Lawrence isn't in Clemson's projection because he's never played a down of football before. We think he's going to play, but we're not really sure. Like, how do I sort of intuitively figure out what to do with that information? That's what's really tough. And that's what, you know, sort of is required sometimes, I think, to bet some of these numbers. You're getting a projection, you're putting statistics in. I know I've gone on for like 10 minutes about this, but I swear I'm almost done. So you put in all this stuff and you get this projection, but understanding what is not in the projection, I think, is incredibly valuable and needs to be accounted for. And in the team previews I do for each team, I try to give you all the information that I use to make the decision for the most part. So I give you the projections for the team that I came up with the formulas, also try to explain what was leading to those projections and also why that might be sort of inferior. You know, if a team lost a lot of production, like especially at a group of five level, if a team lost a lot of production but brought in 4 or 5-star transfers or something, and there are teams that brought in crazy good transfer quarterbacks this year. If there's a team that did that, then okay, like that's not going to show up in the projection, but we need to account for that. And we need to, you know, sort of like at least know that that's in play before we make a decision. You know, I think trying to put numbers on that is the next step for me. And that's a next year thing. And that's going to be really difficult to do.
All right, sorry, we got cut off for a second there, but I do want to follow up a little bit on this schedule point. I think it's also a good segue into giving out a couple of win totals that you do mention here in the guide. And, you know, we talk about schedule analysis and we talk about, you know, people getting, we'll see people all the time that bet these games of the year talk about having, you know, 21 points of closing line value on a game of the year line. That's exactly what you're talking about. We don't know exactly what these lines could be week 7, week 8. Injuries can happen. Teams can just not live up to expectations, or teams can exceed them. LSU and Texas play each other in week 2. And you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, that also what factors into this schedule equation is that whichever team wins that game will have a rocket up its ass for at least a few weeks, because that's a very high-profile win. And in particular, if it's Texas, who a lot of people seem to like this year, if they beat LSU, then their perception is really going to skyrocket. So there's also that factors into the schedule equation as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the interesting thing about Texas, like we'll talk about what I think about their win total in a second. I would just say that their projected spreads in so many games in the game of the year market or look-ahead markets, whatever you want to call them right now, are so small. I mean, they have tough conference road games. You know, they're obviously a dog to LSU and they're a dog to Oklahoma right now, but not to the extent that that can't change very quickly. So there's a lot of sort of coin flippy type stuff going on with them in the market right now that's really interesting. And I would say unusual for a team with a win total this high to have so many games that seem to be this close spread wise. You know, if you're adding up straight win probabilities, like I would find it unlikely you could get to this number very easily. But they're an interesting team. And you're right that, you know, LSU and Texas tend to kind of confound me each year because they're just so insanely talented, but don't end up kind of putting it all together. You know, yeah, you can see situations where in these week 2, 3, 4 high profile games, you know, a team wins this game and, you know, immediately the spreads for the next couple of weeks, there's an adjustment, there's a power rating adjustment. Cause a lot of times, like I think I use the term in the guide, I call these test games, you know, like Miami was a favorite over LSU last year, I believe week 1, or the spread was at least incredibly small. And, you know, we learned a lot week 1 about both teams, to the point that there was then a massive correction. And, you know, we corrected Miami numbers, I think, the whole rest of the year based on what was happening. So, you know, those test games, like, I think we really use that in the market as an opportunity to really learn a lot about teams. We're not going to learn a lot from, you know, a team favored by 21 and winning by 17, a team favored by 30 and winning by 48. You know, are we really going to learn a lot from those games? So those games that we can learn from, especially, you know, the average person watching the primetime Saturday night game, I think you can see kind of big adjustments in the market for that. And that can be really interesting depending on how you feel about that team.
So speaking of Texas, I know this is a team that you mentioned, that you spent some ample time on there in your guide, as you mentioned. They're kind of a team that sort of fascinates you for a variety of different reasons here, because they have that talent level, because they've underachieved here in recent seasons. So is this one of the season win total picks you want to talk about on the show?
Yeah, sure. So I can't give away the candy store. There's a bunch of stuff in the guide, a lot of which is still widely available, actually. But this is one that I can talk about, I think, pretty freely. I really like Texas under at 9.5. You have to pay a little more right now, I think, than about a week ago. I think it's about -140, -150 in a few places. This is such an interesting situation. Taking unders on insanely talented, well-recruited teams is always like the scariest possible thing to do. Because at any time, if the team just magically puts it together, the talent is there to just like achieve really crazy things. Here's what I would say about what I think is happening with this team. So they played Georgia in the bowl game last year, and in a sort of unique environment, every single person is watching the game, and they win outright as a huge dog, and they beat Georgia, who everyone kind of agrees is a top five team in the country. I think whether it's that or some of the other Tom Herman year three, Sam Ehlinger, like amazing statistical year last year, like all of those factors coming into this year, I think have created the perception that Texas is sort of going up a staircase instead of going down. They just beat Georgia. Like they had all those bowl practices. Their quarterback's amazing. Like I love their coach. Like this team is going to take a step forward. And when you talk about step forward, this is a team that won 9 regular season games last year. The number in the market is 9.5. So we are talking about a step forward. Teams with as low a returning production as Texas has this year, under 50%, basically never take steps forward, ever. In fact, they quite frequently take very large steps backwards. And so you look at, okay, returning production, that's a really big red flag. Maybe there are some other things here that can get me interested in Texas. I look at their conference schedule last year, they had the best turnover margin in Big 12 play. That's usually like a pretty big red flag in conference play. Sometimes teams can build up with their non-conference games. You play Savannah State, +6 in turnovers, whatever. You can kind of just kick that to the side. But when you play your conference games and you kind of like overachieve in terms of how many turnovers you force, that's something that generally doesn't carry over year to year. And they won 5 conference games by a touchdown or less. What that necessarily tells me is maybe the gap between them and everyone else wasn't particularly broad. Also, their Pythagorean then is a little less. So there's just a lot of things where they probably weren't the team you thought they were last year. They were probably a little worse. And then in addition to being that, they're also, based on what they're bringing back, going to be worse this year. So it's sort of like this weird case of a team that overachieved and isn't bringing a lot back. So I think it just creates this massive gap. My projections, both formulas, have them between 6 and 7 wins, which is just incredibly eye-catching when I ran it. It's one of the largest differences I have between a market number and my stuff. And there are some reasons why the projections might be inaccurate. I already said, quarterback isn't reflected amazingly. Ehlinger is, by all accounts, sort of a Heisman weird candidate if they get to that 9-10 win range, although he had an insane statistical season last year and didn't even sniff Heisman. But he's maybe his performance taking a step forward is something I'm not accounting for very much. If you happen to just love Tom Herman and think he has some magical effect on a program, maybe that's something that's not being affected. But I do think it's interesting that when you put in, the 10 or 11 variables that tend to predict these things, it spits out a crazy low number for Texas. And I think that, is really sort of should give you pause if you're thinking about betting this team for any sort of large achievement this season. So when I see a number like 9.5 and I'm getting projections of like the 6.4 range, I think it's too good to pass up. I also think we were talking about the look aheads real quick. A team with a 9.5 win total that's projected to be a dog in 2 games, I think is not very likely. They're going to be a dog against LSU at home, probably about a field goal. And they're probably going to be, I think when we get there, about a touchdown dog to Oklahoma, but if you want to argue, it's a little less, okay. So to have kind of 2 games where your win probability is that low and still have a number like this, I think is really interesting. Maybe I'm really wrong. I mean, the projection is way off in a way that I had to go back and really figure out where it was coming from. But, all these things that tend to indicate year-over-year win difference, all that kind of stuff, like they think Texas is going to be way worse. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, 10th out of 10 teams in the Big 12 in returning production, and this is with 5 teams that have a new expected starting quarterback. You've lost a few 1,000-yard receivers in this conference, a couple of 1,000-yard running backs as well, and Texas is still 10th. in returning production, bringing their quarterback back. So, you know, again, as you mentioned there, a lot of concerns about the Longhorns. How about one more? You got time for one more season win total for us here, Ken?
Sure. So I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go here. I'll go a little random. Like, you know, Texas, that's pretty high profile. You know, I think we can go kind of random with the next one. I would say Boise State under 10 is something that I'm actually pretty interested in. And this is sort of like the same thing when you bet a super, you know, like an Alabama or a Clemson under their win total. Like, betting Boise under a number, I'm sure, has just given a lot of people pain over the last, you know, 8 to 10 years or during the Peterson era and stuff. But there's sort of some stuff going on in this conference that I think is really interesting. So Boise and Fresno both played in the title game the last 2 years. Pretty inarguably were the best two teams in the conference the last 2 years. And both are sort of undergoing like a crazy makeover on the fly right now. Fresno's is much worse and their win total is lower. So they sort of have a lot more going on, from a talent standpoint, but Boise's quarterback situation is like really, really interesting to me because they sort of had set this plan up where, you know, Brett Rippon has been there for a few years, achieved statistically great things. The team has won a lot of games. He's now gone. Okay. Who's the replacement? Well, you know, they have five quarterbacks playing in the spring. They had sort of planned for Chase Cord to be the guy. You know, they worked him in last year. They wanted to get him some reps and some different packages, and he tears his knee in the middle of the season. You know, he's going to come back for fall camp hypothetically and come back yet. And he was sort of the guy, and with him on the shelf, we don't know what we're going to get. Now you have like a big time freshman recruit. You have a couple other guys in the mix. Like, I think they might have a big problem at quarterback, especially early in the season. You know, they might have to play some guys to really figure out who the starter is going to be. And they got Florida State like right out of the gate. And I actually love the Seminoles in that game. Not just for that reason, for a few others, but you know, starting the season on that note, I think with a loss is incredibly likely. You're talking about a win total of 10, and they have some other kind of conference indicators, how they played last year, where, you know, this is, I go over this in the book, it's sort of about degrees, right? So I'm telling you Boise State's going to be under. It's probably not going to be that much under. And if a team goes 9-3, was it really that bad of a season? So I'm not trying to, like, bash Boise or anything. I just think that I think you're going to push 10 a ton of the time. And I think 11 and 12 are incredibly unlikely in the range. So this is just kind of the case where when you get a flat number where you're going to push a lot, you know, especially when you get into the, like the 9-10 range, this is going to happen. You know, these types of bets are just super, super appealing when you look at how the schedule plays out, all the factors that are going into the prediction. I think Boise under 10 is like a phenomenal bet.
Well, some very interesting stuff certainly here on the show, and tons of interesting stuff in Lockie Lockerson's 2019 college football season preview. Ken, how can people get this thing, man? It's awesome, and I certainly recommend that everyone does it.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. The great thing about it is I think I can get a lot better too. So, you know, if you see if people read it, you see stuff in there, you know, I really want you to explain more about this, or can we look at this? Like, I'll do it. Like, I got, you know, summers are fun. Summers are running college football stuff and seeing what makes sense. So, you know, definitely let me know that. The guide right now is available to buy on Amazon. That's where you can get it. I think there's been some confusion. I read a lot on my phone, so I think I take for granted that other people do the same thing. Basically, it's available on the Kindle app. So what you do is you go to Amazon, you click a button, and you bought the book. How you read the book, you download the Kindle app on anything. You don't have to own a Kindle, any kind of phone, any tablet, whatever. Download the Kindle app, and you can just read it on the phone. The Kindle app is free. It doesn't cost any money, so you're just paying for the guide like you would with anything else. So you can just read it on your phone, your tablet, super convenient. So, you know, encourage everybody to do that. Hope everybody likes the guide, and just, you know, my info's in there. Let me know what we can do better next year.
Well, that's an important thing to mention too, because people hear it's on Kindle, or, you know, it's on Amazon. Do I need the Kindle app? Do I need this? Do I need that? You know, Lockie just mentioned there. Obviously, there are a lot of different ways you can check this out. And of course, he's very, very approachable on Twitter. Not to say I want to blow up your mentions or anything, but at Lockie Lockerson on Twitter, always willing to banter and, of course, help you out here with getting this guide. Ken, always great to talk to you, man. It's always enlightening. And you know what else, too? You always give me something different to think about. And, you know, we just talked about how, you know, you did a different thing in terms of schedule analysis and all that. And, you know, I kind of go with the traditional format. And, you know, for next year, I got a lot more things to think about. And from a power ratings aspect as well, probably looking more at weighting quarterbacks some more, because, you know, you mentioned that maybe that's something that we don't do enough. So really appreciate making me think about things. Really appreciate you taking some time here as well. And once again, man, I congratulate you for the guide. It's fantastic.
Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate all those things. And, you know, hopefully we can run this back a couple times during the season and start talking about some actual games. It should be fun.
Absolutely, man. Take care. All right, there you go. There's Lockie Lockerson at Lockie Lockerson on Twitter. The Lockie Lockerson's 2019 college football season preview available on July 25th on Amazon. Absolutely fantastic piece. Will make you think. And again, if you are somebody who's just trying to get ready for the college football season, it's a great piece of reading material, good for vacations, good for road trips, any of that type of stuff. So make sure you check it out. Coming up on Thursday, a new edition of the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. And then Friday, we'll chat UFC with Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast with a big pay-per-view event coming up here this weekend. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.